About 6 weeks ago, we talked about creation, that God created everything. We talked about the fall of man and God's plan of redemption and restoration so that we may one day be back into the full presence of God and glory of God. In the last 2 weeks, Jimmy has talked to us about what is church, what's the point of church, and what's church supposed to look like. In the next 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about worship. My task assigned to me, I'm going to do my best today, is to talk about what worship is. Jimmy's going to take it to the next step, talk about more in the context of what we do here at First Baptist. I'm going to share with you, and I'm going to be speaking to you as though this is your problem, about some of the problems we have in worship. But I want you to know that it's about a year's journey for me. God is pointing out things in my heart that have to change, and this is really from a perspective of a conviction of sin that he has shown me over the last couple of years what he intends for worship. And it is very easy for us to do the wrong thing when it comes to worship. So first off, please know this is Jimmy's fault. Secondly, please understand this is coming from my own experience, my own heart. So every time I'm talking to you, I'm talking to myself. Lastly, would you please soften your heart right now? God wants to change you. He doesn't want to leave you where you are. He wants to move you. And a lot of times we think we know the areas that he wants to challenge us, and then we discover there's a whole new area that he really wants to work in our hearts. So that's my ask this morning. So what is worship? Well, let's go to the dictionary, 1828. Webster says, chiefly and eminently the act of paying divine honors to the supreme being, or the reverence and homage paid to him in religious exercises consisting in adoration, confession, prayer, thanksgiving, and the like. The worship of God is an eminent part of religion, and prayer is a chief part of religious worship. Okay, I'm done if the worship team wants to come on up. Sorry, just kidding. So that's a great definition that really tells us, I think, it would be hard to find a better definition as concisely written as this about what is worship. But I think the question that we really should be asking this morning is what is true and acceptable worship? And we need to look at that from the eyes of the Creator, the one that we are worshiping. His position on the right worship is really the only thing that matters. So that's what we're going to dig into. What is God's purpose in worship? What is acceptable worship? How big a part of our lives should worship be? Do we seek after worship? Should we seek after worship? Let's start with talking about worship being a response. So I think to understand God's intent on worship, first we have to understand that worship primarily is intended as our response to him. Worship is not the well that we go to in order to be filled, to be recharged. We go to God to fill us. When we have an encounter with him, when we seek him, he impacts us through a response in worship. Worship itself is the filling and realignment that happens when we encounter God. I think it's important that we understand what this means. We don't seek worship to experience God. We seek God and experience his glory through a response in worship. Worship is the overflow of a heart that is seeking him and experiences him. Let me say that one more time. Worship is the overflow of a heart that is seeking him and experiences him. There's a great example we have in the Bible. Not too long ago, we talked about the Exodus and Moses and God taking the people out of their slavery toward the promised land. He gave them a law, and in the middle of this process of him giving these laws through Moses, and Moses as the intercessor for the people. At one point, Moses turns to God, and starting in Exodus 33, verse 18 to 20, Moses said, please show me your glory. And God said, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and will proclaim before you my name, the Lord. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. But, he said, you cannot see my face, for man shall not see me and live. So God responds to Moses. Moses first says, I want to see your glory. And God says, okay, here's how it's going to happen. And then God takes Moses and he puts him up in this place in a rock where his view is such that he's not going to see the full glory of God as he passes by, otherwise he'll be turned into a little crater. So God has him positioned there, and it says in Exodus 34, 5 to 8, the Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation. And get this, Moses quickly bowed his head toward the earth and worshiped. This is a profound worship experience, and it starts with Moses seeking the glory of God. Now notice, Moses doesn't say, so God, I really want to go to this great worship service, and in fact, I've got five of my favorite songs and a particular version on YouTube that I really like, and if we could get that to be a part of this worship service, I think it's going to be pretty awesome. No, he says, he didn't have any expectation. He says, God, I want to see your glory. That's the first thing. The second thing, God designs the whole service. God says, okay, Moses, here's what's going to happen. You're only going to see this much of me. You're going to be hiding in this rock. There's other verses in between these that talk about clearing out the valley from all these animals that are going to get toast if they see me walking by. God defines what the worship service is. And thirdly, the only response is worship. Moses falls down and worships God in response. In fact, the purpose of all of creation is to glorify God. As we see Jesus coming into Jerusalem, a pinnacle part of the experience of the Christ, as he's coming into the capital city, presumably to become king, like a geopolitical king is what most people think at this point. And they've seen his works. And it says, as Jesus comes, it says, as Jesus was drawing near, already on the way down the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of his disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works they had seen, saying, blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in earth and glory in the highest. And some of the Pharisees of the crowd said to him, teacher, rebuke your disciples. He answered, I tell you, if these were silent, the very stones would cry out. Creation itself is going to glorify God. Later of Jesus, Paul writes in Philippians 2, and being found in human form, Jesus humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that in the name of Jesus, every knee will bow in heaven and on earth and under earth, and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Now, I used to look at this like everyone's going to gather, they're going to see Jesus, and then God's going to smack them so they fall down on their knees and they worship him, right? Like some sort of coercion. This is going to happen, and if I have to, by my power, you're going to worship. I don't think that's what happens. I think when you experience the presence of God and you see his glory, there is only one response. You fall to your knees and worship. Worship is a response to God's glory. We also see that worship was God's design from the very beginning. I want to talk a little bit about the creation account and how we can see that what God intended from the very beginning was for his glory and for us to be worshipers. Now, before I jump into this, I want us all to recognize together that when we talk about the creation account, we're talking about something that happened for real in history. That what we read about in the Bible of God doing creative work, it was God doing creative work. There was nothing before creation other than God. And everything that he created, he fully intended and had a purpose for. There are no accidents. There's no random chance. God intended something specific in creation. So he is the one that we should listen to as he judges his own work. So after the 6 days of creation, God looks at everything he does, and he says this in Genesis 1:31, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Matthew Henry, in his commentary on verse 31, says, good, for it answers the end of its creation and is fit for the purpose for which it was designed. Good, for it is serviceable to man, whom God had appointed Lord of the visible creation. And good, for it is all for God's glory. There is that in the whole visible creation which is a demonstration of God's being and perfections. Let me say that again. There is that in the whole visible creation, which is a demonstration of God's being and perfections. In other words, everything he created is a representation of his glory. It was good. Good only comes from God. Everything he created, he said, he looked at it and he said, all of this represents me. Now, as we go and we look at his engagement with Adam and Eve, the only two that have been, the only two humans at this point, Adam and Eve, he gives them two commands. And all of creation, but before the fall, we only see two commands. The first one is this. In Genesis 1, 28, and God blessed them, and he said to them, Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing on the earth. And going to chapter 2, 15, the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. Have you ever wondered about this? Like, what's he doing? Like, what's the purpose? I think it's because God can't manage all the weeds, and we need to trim back those hedges every once in a while, right? But God has an intent and purpose. It starts with him having created everything as an extension of his glory. He creates man to glorify God, so he puts him right in the middle of his glory, and he says, go and know me and experience me. But notice there's no command here to worship, right? It seems missing, right? If your job is to glorify me and worship me, then shouldn't that be God's command? Well, I think we already covered this. When you experience God's glory and you're in his presence, the only response is worship. And I promise you, worship was happening moment by moment with Adam and Eve before the fall. God's intent of creation was his glory and for us to be worshipers. This is sort of like the artist. You guys have a favorite artist, maybe a songwriter, a band, a painter. Ruth's not here. That's her row. It's empty, I noticed, reserved for the Simons. I was up at Ruth's house, and I saw a wall of all of her work. Not all her work, but it was all her work. And I looked at it, and I saw the artist in this, all this art that she had created. It's beautiful. And I felt like I saw a part of Ruth. I didn't say this in the first service, but I'll say it now. I'm a big fan of 21 Pilots, and that's so that these guys will pay attention to me now for the rest of my talk. Many of you may not know 21 Pilots. It's kind of, I'm sure you didn't expect me to say that. But it's because when I hear the music and I read the lyrics, I can identify with the author of this stuff. Tyler's name is Tyler. I don't know what his last name is. I think his name is Tyler. But I feel like I'm looking into a bit of his heart and his soul when I experience what he has created. And this is precisely what God has done with his creation. He has created it as an extension of his glory so that we might experience him. I have a picture here I want to show you. Just raise your hand if you think you might know what this is. And the answer is not stars in space. Anybody? Maybe Josh does. This is called the Hubble Extreme Deep Field. The Hubble, as you know, is a telescope that is outside of our atmosphere, so it can see some pretty amazing things. This picture was released on September 25th, 2012. It is an image representing 23 days of exposure to gather light from the darkest pinpoint in space that they could find. They said, we want to see how deep we can look into space without any of the relatively near galaxies and stars cluttering our view. So they found the darkest spot. The darkest spot, by the way, is 1/32,000,000th of the visible sky. That's the dot that they looked at. This was what came back. There are a handful of stars in there, but there are 5,500 galaxies in this, because God is awesome. We look at what God has done. It doesn't matter how deep we look inside the atom or how far we look into space. God is bigger, and he is trying to show us who he is by what he has created. We were meant to understand the glory of God and to worship him. Now, God's way is superior. So there's two commands. I gave you one. One was go experience and know me through my creative work. The second command we find in Genesis 2, 16 and 17, and the Lord God commanded the man, saying, you may surely eat of every tree in the garden, But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in that day that you eat of it, you will surely die. You've ever wondered why the tree of knowledge of good and evil? You see, God created Adam and Eve to seek all truth and to define all right and wrong and determine their way solely from him. And he says, if you stay in my goodness, if you walk with me, you will have life, because all life comes from me. But if you choose to step outside of that, there is only darkness and death and destruction. It's the opposite of what God is. And so he says these two things to Adam and Eve. He says, go experience and know me. And he says, stay under me. Seek me, and you will be fulfilled. So what is true worship then? True worship is a right and proper response to experiencing God's presence. It is when we remember God's greatness and are insignificant, and we are so impacted by God's glory that we become nothing and there is no part of us left to add to his glory. In true worship, what part are you? What part is your opinion? What part is your desires or your plans? They are so insignificant compared to the surpassing glory of God that in his presence we diminish to nothing, and true worship is the response to our encounter with him. That's great, but now we have a problem, and that is Adam chose poorly. And all of humanity now is born into this deception, and we are seeking ourselves by nature and not seeking God. And so everything gets distorted, and one of the things that happens is that we begin to look at God's gifts. We begin to look at the good things that he's created, and our minds are changed, and we begin to seek those things rather than seeking God. We seek those things that we think are giving us pleasure and fulfillment. We turn to those to fulfill our needs, and we forget to seek God first. So worship is one of those things that has been impacted this way. So we see we're worshiping beings, we're going to worship. And so after the fall, we see all kinds of bad worship. So there are beliefs in wrong things, wrong gods, right? There are like these physical idols that we see, especially in the Bible, where people are bowing down to these. We have things like our careers, our passions. Check your internet browser history and you'll know, you know, how materialistic maybe you are. Maybe there's guilty, right? When I shop for something, I get drawn into the next thing I'm going to buy, right? There are these things that we begin to worship, and we start seeking after the gifts rather than the giver. And we do this in worship. And it's easier to discern when we say, okay, clearly that person or I am seeking after not God. But I think it's harder to discern when that gift of worship actually exists within the context, the Christian context of the church. And by that I mean, just because we're in this building and just because we say we're here to honor God doesn't mean that we aren't seeking the gift rather than seeking the giver. Let me give you an example of this. One of the gifts that God gave us is sex. And sex, I believe, was designed to be a response to something that God intended, which was a result of seeking him. If I seek God and I'm in his will, then he will bring me together with his intended mate for me. And a response in that process is going to be this great gift that he's given us, that he's chosen to use to fulfill us in that context. Right? That's the gift. But what happens, so my personal experience, I grew up in the church. My dad was a conservative Baptist preacher. This is actually a conservative Baptist church. So my dad was a conservative Baptist preacher. I grew up knowing right and wrong, you know, reading the Bible. And one of the things I learned early on was the right context, the right Christian context of sex. Right? Boil it down simply for you. It's a man and a woman in a committed marriage, right? And then it stays within that context of that marriage. That is the Christian context of proper for that gift that God has given us. But what I did was all of those legal steps. And then I got inside my marriage. And did I seek God or did I seek the gift inside my marriage? And I can tell you, I was excited to get married because I wanted that gift. And so I sought after that gift. And for years, it hurt my relationship with my wife. And it was hard for me to understand because this was something that I thought God gave us and we were supposed to go and take hold of. But I'm not supposed to seek the gift. Young men and women, when you get married, this is not free for all that you'll go after those gifts. Seek God. Love your spouse and let those gifts be a response to what he is doing in your relationship. That's the intention. And what I'm talking about is worship, because we can do this so easily in our church. Once we're inside the church, our focus can be entirely on what I'm getting out of this. And like in that relationship, there's moments of disappointment because I'm seeking after something I'm going to get. There's a timing that I think should happen. There's a configuration of things that I have in my mind. This is how it's supposed to look. But God never intended for me to design that. God intended that to be a response to me seeking after him. Do you ever go home from worship and the things on your mind are all the things that should have been probably done a little bit differently at the service? Today, after I'm preaching, there's probably a lot of that that's going to happen. Did he really say that? Is there an expectation you have about what worship is supposed to look like? This happens all the time. People will move from church to church for no other reason than style or what they think they're getting out of the worship experience. And I'm here to tell you that inside the context of church, worship can be an idol there too. And this is what I want us to hear and understand about worship. There's a great example that we have from King David in the Bible. If we kind of the whole story of the Israelites, right? God has said, I'm going to have my own people, and then he called his people, and over hundreds of years, they went through all of this process and transition, and finally they're in the promised land, and finally all the enemies have basically been removed, and they are there to take hold of the promised land. They have a capital city. This is an exciting moment, right? So David turns to the people, and he says this, starting verse Chronicles 13, verse 1, and David said to all the assembly of Israel, if it seems good to you, and from the Lord our God, let us send abroad to our brothers who remain in the lands of Israel, as well as to the priests and Levites in the cities that have pasture lands, that they may be gathered to us. Then let us bring again the ark of our God to us, for we did not seek it in the days of Saul. All the assembly agreed to do so, for the thing was right in the eyes of the people. So let's just think about this worship service that's being designed here by man. It starts and it ends with, will this please people? And I guess we'll go ahead and do it because it seems right in the eyes of all the people. How many times do we see a prophet come to a king and he says, hey, king, so I was out in the land and I did a survey. And survey results are in. And here's what we need to do next, because 52% of the people think this is the right thing to do. And the king goes, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Let's do that. Of course, that never happened, right? The prophet comes in and says, God says this is what we're going to do. So this is a little foreshadowing, okay, of whether or not this service is true and acceptable. Let's move on to 1 Chronicles 13, 6 to 11. And David, now they're doing this worship service, and David and all of Israel went up to Baalah, that is, to Kiriath Jearim, that belongs to Judah, to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is also called the name of the Lord, who sits enthroned above the cherubim. And they carried the Ark of God on a new cart. Pause. Let's talk about this Ark for a second. So first of all, they're seeking the Ark. I missed that point in the first passage. It says that they are seeking after the Ark. It doesn't say they are seeking God. It says they're seeking the Ark. They want this cool religious thing that has so much meaning to them. They want it over here. And that seemed pleasing to the people. And now we see it's driving on a cart. Okay, so there was a very specific way that the ark was meant to be carried, and it was not on a cart. It was by these poles that went through these rings, and the people shouldered the poles, and they didn't touch the ark. If you touched the ark, you died. It's holy, you're not dead. And so they were meant to carry the ark on the poles. And I can just see this happening, right? Dave's like, hey, let's go do this. And this dude, what's his name? Uzzah? He says, hey, you know what? That's a long way, and it's mostly uphill. What if we put it on a cart, right? This will be awesome. We can get there even faster. We're going to use this modern technology. So they're hauling the ark on a cart from the house of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio are driving the cart, and David and all of Israel were celebrating before God with all of their might, with song and lyres and harps and tambourines and cymbals and trumpets. You see what's happening here? Everyone is having an awesome worship experience. This is amazing. And then they came to the threshing floor of Chidon. Uzzah put his hand on the ark, presumably to steady it, and he died there before the Lord. And David was angry because the Lord had broken out against Uzzah. And I'm telling you, in this, God is declaring this worship an idol. It's exactly what he's doing. He's saying, you guys are not worshiping me. You're worshiping something else. You're seeking my gift of worship. I kind of look at it this way. We, man, in all of our wisdom, we've got this great plan of what's going to have the most emotional impact in our worship service, and we really want God to come too, right? We believe, I mean, God's done some great things. We want him to be a part of our worship service. That's what's happening, but it's not a worship service for God. It's a worship service for the people. I was a worship pastor, worship director, something like that, at the last church I was in North Dakota for 10 or 15 years. And so I'm responsible, as I am for the 1045, responsible basically for the production of what we do in our worship service. And I had this gal on my team. She suffered from not being very gifted in some ways in music. And she was on the worship team. And she often was a distraction. She would mess up noticeably. On top of that, she had a difficult personality. So when she was, you know, working with the team, the worship team, it was hard sometimes for the teams to deal with some of the personality traits that she had. And I was facing the people, and I'm pretty sure if I took a survey of the people, the results would have been, yeah, she doesn't need to be up there anymore. She's ruining my worship experience. And so I decided I need to remove her. But before I did, God jumped in and said, why don't you go talk to the pastor about this? So I went and sat down with the pastor, and he said, I understand what you're saying, Mark, and I agree. We don't want distractions in worship. We want our worship to be high quality, and we want to give our best to God and all that. And he went and talked to the leaders, and he came back to me and said, no, she stays on the team. And so I went back, and I said, good. We're going to do it that way. And you know what God did with that to show his glory? He made people sit out there and listen to her sing and understand this isn't about what we're producing. He made people on the team have to deal with those personality quirks and some of that stuff so that they would understand God's grace. The two first things that God says as he passes Moses in the story we just read, the first two descriptions of the Lord is the Lord, a God merciful and gracious. God's intent in this was not the best production. It was not so I could come into the service and take something from it that I thought would fulfill me. His intent was that his glory would be on display and that we would respond and grow in worship. David fortunately learns from this. There's a second time that he decides to move the ark. But between those two times, it's interesting, there's two battles with the Philistines. And you can go read this on your own. It's between chapters 13 and 15. But as David comes to fight the Philistines, the Bible's very clear. He stops, and he goes, and he seeks the Lord. He says, how should I fight this fight? And God tells him. And he goes, and he wins the battle. And he comes up another time against the Philistines, and he says, God, how should I fight this fight? And he says, you need to do it this way. And so then he does it, and he follows God, and he defeats the Philistines. Do you see what's happening? God is showing himself to David, and David is seeking after God's will. So now he comes back, and let's read. We're going to start in 1 Chronicles 15, verse 1. This is David coming back now to get the ark. David built houses for himself in the city of David, and he prepared a place for the ark of God and pitched a tent for it. Then David said that there was no one but the Levites. He said that no one but the Levites may carry the ark of God. For the Lord had chosen them to carry the ark of the Lord and to minister to him forever. And David assembled all Israel at Jerusalem to bring up the ark of the Lord to its place, which he had prepared for it. Going to verse 12, and he said to them, you are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites. Consecrate yourselves, you and your brothers, so that you may bring the ark of the Lord, the God of Israel, to the place that I have prepared for it. Because you did not carry it the first time, the Lord our God broke out against us because we did not seek him according to the rule. And there it is. David recognizes that the first attempt was entirely not about God at all, but now we are seeking him. Interestingly, if you fast forward and you see how this and other things I'm sure impacted David's life, he wanted to build the place of worship for God in its permanent place, the temple. But God said, nope, it's not your job. I'm going to give it to your son. So David spends a tremendous amount of energy and resources, and he gets everything lined up like turnkey for Solomon so that Solomon can go and actually build this thing. And David's very passionate about it. And there comes a point in 1 Chronicles 28 where David is, it's the inauguration, what I'll call the inauguration of Solomon, not only for building the temple, but also for running the kingdom. Listen to the first two things that he tells Solomon. And you, Solomon, my son, know the God of your father and serve him with a whole heart and with a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understands every plan and thought. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever. Be careful now, for the Lord has chosen you to build a house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it. Where is the sanctuary of God today? Where is the place of worship? God has taken this physical location where his presence was, and he has put it into every one of his, which is you. Every one of you now bears the responsibility of this place of worship in your body, in yourself. Are you seeking worship or are you seeking God? We're going to close now, but I'd like you to, if you would, just close your eyes and bow your heads. And I'd like to spend just a minute of reflection on this. Search your heart and ask yourself, what is it that you seek in worship? Are you seeking an experience? Are you seeking something that you can come and take away? Are you stealing a gift that God has intended for you to be out of the overflow of a heart that is seeking him? And I'm telling you that this is my struggle. If we were to rewrite these words from David to Solomon and write them from God to you, it would say something like this. And you, my son and daughter, know God and serve him with a whole heart and with a willing mind, for the Lord searches all hearts and understands every plan and thought. If you seek him, he will be found by you. Be careful now. He has chosen his sanctuary to be in you. God, we are beginning to understand the weight of your calling to us. You have chosen, Lord, in your great wisdom, to make our hearts the place of your presence, where we would worship. God, I pray that we would seek after you and for your glory, that you would continue to reveal yourself to us, and in response, we would worship and love you. Lord, may we have great worship now. May you be glorified in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks, Mark. We get to now kind of transition into a time of communion today, which is actually kind of cool. So if the gentlemen want to come on down now.